dedicated to helping children find success during the school day and beyond through her work with teachers, principals, parents, and children. She holds two master's degrees, one in special ed and one in school psychology, as well as having completed extensive postgraduate work in administration. After working for the New York City Department of Education, Tzipora assumed the role of director of the Learning Center at the Beis Rachel School in Muncie, as well as founding Pathways Consulting Services, a professional development agency. She has served as the permanent educational consultant for many schools in Muncie over the last decade and presents trainings throughout the country. Mrs. Shook is also an adjunct faculty instructor for Mercy College, teaching in both the undergraduate and graduate programs of special ed and psychology. From all her responsibilities, she most enjoys her counseling and coaching sessions with children and teens, giving them the cognitive, linguistic, social, and emotional tools they need to succeed in the real world. I'm also delighted to introduce our technical facilitator, Eitan, who will be working with Tzipora and can be reached through the chat box should you have any technical difficulties. Welcome to all, and Tzipora, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me yet? Is that good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, good. So first of all, thank you all for joining in. I appreciate your time tonight. And I'd like to give you a little bit of background of where this is coming from. As much as I'm coming as a presenter that is a special educator and a school psychologist, tonight I'm also coming as a presenter that's a parent. And a hard part of, I think, everybody's day is that homework time. So thinking about that and thinking about what I know about education, I've put together some simple ideas and some easy reframes that I hope will make this experience a little bit easier for both you and your child. What I'd like to do tonight is focus on the many life skills that we can instill and practice throughout this homework time, how we can help children develop good organizational strategies, provide empathy to deepen our relationship with our children, and also instill a sense of fun and excitement into this time that we have to do anyway. If at any time you have some questions, feel free to use the chat room, and I will be happy to stop and try to address them as we go. So take a minute now and kind of point to any of the words on the slide that describe the current homework situation in your home right now. And for those of you that don't have the slides in front of you, I'm going to read the words out loud and just kind of make a check in your head if this describes you. Careful. Excruciating, peaceful, fun, enjoyable, pleasant, quiet, cooperating, encouraging, mature, stressful, glaring, intense, or threatening. So most of you probably were picking more of the negative words. If you only picked fun, enjoyable, and pleasant, then I don't want to waste your time tonight because you've already got this down pat. When we think about homework, we definitely want to bring some humor into it. So I'd like to say that the student says, "Would you punish me for something I didn't do?" The teacher responds, "Of course not." And the student says, "Well, I didn't do my homework." Or the molar says, "This homework looks like your mother's handwriting." And the student says, "That's because I used my mother's pen." Question, why did the boy eat his homework? Answer, the teacher told him it was a piece of cake. But seriously, if we could only laugh at the time that our children had homework, things would be a lot easier. And most of us are not used to laughing at that time. The way we need to start shifting how we think about homework is actually to have a real paradigm shift. A good definition of paradigm would be a way of viewing a certain situation. And a paradigm shift would be a different view of the same situation based on new information. Stephen Covey, in his excellent book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective Families, discusses the idea of paradigm shift. And he tells a story about himself as the owner of a very large corporation. He used to take a train home, the Metro North that many of us are familiar with, from Penn Station up to Connecticut on Friday afternoon. And every Friday afternoon, he caught the rush hour back, and he stood most of the time. He didn't get a seat, and he was jostled, and it was hot. There wasn't a place to put down his items, and he said it was just thoroughly unpleasant. So he decided one Friday, he's going to leave early. He's the owner of the company, not a big deal. He'll leave at 11. And as he boarded the train, he stopped, he bought himself a New York Times, even bought himself a milkshake, his favorite drink. And he sat, and the car was nearly empty, and he was so enjoying it, sipping his milkshake, unfolded the New York Times just the way he liked, and started reading. As the train pulled out of Penn Station, it made one or two more stops in Upper Manhattan. And at the last stop in Manhattan, a father got on with two young children. Father slumped down into a seat. The children sat across from him, seemingly young children. And Stephen thought to himself, well, I hope they'll be quiet. I really want to enjoy this ride. And sure enough, the children started running up and down the car. And he said, you know, this is going to really annoy me. And he held his newspaper up, trying just to be mindful of his time and sipping his milkshake. And the children sat on the seats in front of him and then stood on the seats in front of him and leaned over and stuck their heads in his newspaper. And he was really trying to control himself. Finally, one of the children tumbled over into his seat, crushing his newspaper and spilling his milkshake. And when that happened, he picked the child up, walked to the front of the car, and said to the father, sir, can't you mind your children? To which the father replied, I am so sorry. I am just so sorry. We just came from Columbia Hospital, and my wife just died. And at that, Stephen said he understood what paradigm shift meant. He no longer viewed the children as rambunctious. He felt so sorry for them. He no longer viewed the father as not attending to them. He was caught in his own grief, and he sat down next to the man and said, how can I help you? Where do you live? What arrangements need to be made? And that's the idea of paradigm shift. Same situation, but the way we're going to look at it is going to be based on different information. What's your homework? Oh, let me skip over. Sorry. What's your homework paradigm? And for most of us, it's teachers don't realize or don't care how much time it takes. Some people are going to say, I hate it more than the kids. Some people feel so much of it is pointless or busy work. For some, it's I'm overwhelmed doing homework with more than one child. You know, you can give me all the ideas, but I'm doing homework with five children or six children. I just can't handle it. Or it brings out the worst in both of us for no good reason. I hated it as a kid, and I'm hating it now. So what we want to do is start looking at what your homework paradigm is and start to shift it. What teachers want to accomplish, most people during homework time, is a sense of review for things they learned during the day, a time to do a little bit of additional practice, a way for the child to organize their ideas and their materials, and a small glimpse into the child's academics to get to see what are the children doing throughout the day. During this homework time, not only can the teacher accomplish some goals, but the child can actually learn some really important life skills. I would say some of those skills are time management, planning, prioritizing, goal setting, being resourceful, communicating, task initiation, just getting started, task completion, finishing things. Or are they learning shirking, getting away with it, excuses, irresponsibility, procrastination, and task avoidance? And we know the rule in psychology is that all behavior that's reinforced is repeated. And any attention given to behavior, whether it's good behavior or less than good behavior, or whether it's positive attention or negative attention, is going to get us more of that behavior. So we want to make sure that we're attending to all the life skills during this homework time, and we're not attending to the things like shirking or excuses or irresponsibility. The first thing that we want to discuss is the idea of location, location, location. We know they're the three most important words in real estate, and they're also pretty important words in homework also. Whether you're thinking about this for next year or whether you're planning on doing it now, the idea is to designate two locations in your house. The first location is probably done for about 60 to 70% of the homework, and that's daily homework. And that's things like worksheets or review questions or studying for a spelling test where somebody has to call the words out to you. And most children like to do that on the dining room table, on the kitchen table, or in their den. Because nearby, they need a phone, they need a parent, they need food, and they need distractions. And this location works just perfectly for that type of homework. But some of the time, we're going to say about 30% of the time, we need a study location. And that's going to be a quiet location without distractions. And we're only going to be there for a short period of time. The child's going to be there. Sometimes we have to be there with the child. And that's going to alleviate that. I can't concentrate. It's too noisy in here. And instead of actually getting to study with your child or having them study, they're too busy arguing with their siblings. So right away, you're going to say to them, listen, I always see you do your homework at the dining room table, but it's not really working when we have to do that memorization or when you have to study something quietly. Let's pick another spot in the house that you know will always be available for you at this time. The second thing that's important to get ourselves ready to make this paradigm shift is having the right things in the right time, in the right place at the right time. Most parents like to do this at the back-to-school sales. It's not too late to do now. You know, Walmart's a great place to do this. It's just like you would send your child with supplies to school and possibly even in a supply box. You want to have something like that available in your house. Don't lose time on, I don't have a pen, it's not sharpened, I need whiteout. I can't do this assignment because I don't have glue, I don't have tape. Have everything there. And it's not a place that your children are going to raid when they need to grab extra supplies for school. It's designated just for this homework time. It has a lid, it's shut, and it's on the dining room table or the kitchen table, and it's available. And something that we also like to think about putting in there is what we call sticky school supplies. Everybody likes to use nicer products. So I'm not saying that you have to buy 100 of those pencils or pens, but we're going to throw in a few really neat kind of gadgets or gizmos, ultra cool pens, decorated pencils, funky colored glue, neon post-it notes that are going to get our child in the mood a little bit faster. Have some mini water bottles nearby so they don't have to leave and go get the drink in the kitchen. And sometimes we even throw in a couple toys to keep the younger children occupied that go back into that homework box. So the younger kids know they'll be busy with those things while we're busy helping the older ones with the homework. We also talk about the idea of a mystery box. And a mystery box comes out every now and then. And a mystery box sometimes comes out when it's an especially long homework night, or whether it's a harder homework time. The mystery box has things in it like timers, because sometimes we have to time some reading or some kriya. It has a bookmark so we can mark off the place of where we are. If you're familiar with the store Staples, they have a large red button that when you press it, it says, that was easy. It costs about $5, and kids can either use it when something's really hard or when something actually was easy, but they often like using that. A digital recorder is often helpful, costs $20, $25. Children like to kind of tape record themselves and listen back if they're memorizing something or they're practicing the reading and they want you to listen afterwards. Sometimes we'll put in a joke book or we'll Xerox the joke. We'll put in some fun book, a really cute book called How to Survive Homework Without Throwing Up, a stress or a squish ball, or nowadays all the kids are into Silly Putty, and a cartoon that we might just find. So we're going to keep that, and we're going to keep it available. We're not going to bring it out all the time, and we're going to change what's in it so it keeps up the suspense. Okay, let me turn to the next slide. Another idea that we want to think about is the idea called dedicated homework time. And that's kind of the time that you think about your evening schedule and you let them know that you're available during that time. That's one goal, is that you're there and you can participate. The other goal is there's some kids that come and within 6 minutes, they're done with all their homework. You never saw it. It came out. It went away. It was done very carelessly. It was done very quickly. we say to a child like that is, we need to pick a time that we can work on this together. The idea of routine and structure so that kids know at 6 o'clock or at 6:30 or at 7, my mother or my father will be available. We like to try to pick a time that works for both of us. I wouldn't pick that time immediately after they come home. All kids need a snack. Some kids even need to eat dinner before they start the homework. They also need to decompress and relax. We ask, would you want your boss waiting for you in your living room when you get home from work every day and say, okay, here's what you need to do tonight? You'd be like, wait a minute, I just worked all day. I need some time off first. And it also helps with task initiation. If they know that they always need to start their homework by 6:30 or by 7 or by 5 o'clock, they don't have to wait around for you to nag them, are you starting, are you starting, are you starting? You're just going to say, it's homework time. Sometimes we get a complaint from parents that sounds something like, my child was up the whole night doing homework. And why is that true? Because when the parent was going downstairs to get a drink at 1 a.m. or going to get the baby from their crib at 12:15, they saw their child's light on, saw them sitting at their desk or on their bed setting. And they said, wow, this child's been working all evening. But really what happens is the child came home and they did some decompressing and they did some relaxing and they did some snacks and they did some dinners and they did some emails and they did some phone calls and they did some playing with the baby. And then they realized they didn't have the notes they needed or the worksheet or the spelling words. So at 8 o'clock or 8:30, they called somebody and wrote it down or faxed it or emailed it or scanned it. And then they decided they're going to get started, but they couldn't find the right supplies. And then somebody called them very importantly with a phone call, or they needed to finish a chapter of a book or a game or a DVD. And by the time they actually got into the real setting was 11:30. This is for older children, or 11:45. So when the father or the mother saw them past midnight, it hadn't actually been setting the whole night. It actually started recently. So what we want to say to kids is, we do this for teachers, do it to students, and you can do it as a parent as well. You say, listen, let's talk for a minute. When you come home from school, what time do you walk in the door? Do you walk in at 4:10, 4:15, 5:30, 5:45? Can you just write down for me on a piece of paper what you do when you get home and how long you think it takes you? And most kids will have a good time with it. They're like, yeah, we eat dinner for about 20 minutes, and then I relax for about 5 minutes, and then I do homework for about 3 hours, and then I take a shower for about 2 minutes, and then I'm done. So we'll take that paper and we'll put it away, and in about another week or two, we'll bring out another paper, and we'll kind of just follow them around, and we'll write down what we call the real time, and we'll compare the two, and we'll say, wow, listen, you kind of thought you were doing homework for 3 hours and eating dinner for 20 minutes. It looks like we're eating dinner for 3 hours here. You've been sitting around this table and doing homework for about 20 minutes. And that's okay if that's a special evening and, you know, Bubby and Xavier are there at dinner time. So I want to say to a child is every single day there's going to be a priority. And sometimes the priority is not homework. Sometimes the priority is a family event or a medical appointment or an evening out. And if so, we have to rearrange how we're going to get that homework done. And sometimes the homework is studying for a test or completing a report or a project. Every day there's a priority, which is the big event. There's some homework time. Homework we're going to differentiate from study time because homework are things that we're completing in a written format and studying are things that we have to review. We all need downtime, family time, food, and a reasonable bedtime. And the more sleep kids get, the better off they do. So we want to kind of look at everything that has to happen and make a realistic timetable with our child of how that gets done. A good suggestion is that hard tasks come first. The idea of, I'm just going to get this out of the way and that out of the way, but the whole night I'm thinking about this huge math test that I don't know, and I'm just going to be failing it, and no matter how much time I spend studying, I'm never going to be able to understand it. That type of impending dread uses up a lot of emotional energy. So unless a child is really opposed to doing this, we suggest get the hard thing done with first. You'll feel lighter. The easier things anyway are easier for you, so you'll be able to speed through those. Another idea is to actually make a written to-do list. Buy a mini whiteboard, write it on a piece of paper, and tell the child, as soon as you're done with the first thing, cross it off, cross it off with permanent marker, get it out of the way. Sometimes when there's a really big assignment or a lot of studying that has to be done, we need to chunk it and we need to say, okay, what's the first part? Great. After the first part, take a break and build in those mini breaks. Sometimes those breaks are just running around and stretching or schmoozing, leaving the homework area, taking a snack. Sometimes a 10-minute timer works well. 10 minutes is a good working time before taking a break. As we pull the time past 10 minutes, especially for younger children, that attention span really fades. So we can chunk things up into those 10-minute increments. Another thing that we really need to be cognizant about is communicating well with the school. And whether that's something that you heard at the back-to-school orientation evening, or whether it was communicated in writing, or if you're having PTA this week, next week, just had it, what are my child's teacher's expectations? What does this teacher want from homework time? How long does he or she think it should be taking the average child in the class? What's the maximum time my child should spend on it? My child is a weaker student, or my child's a slower worker. How much time is actually realistic? Just because there's more time in the evening doesn't mean we're going to spend it on homework. How should I contact the teacher if it's not going well? If I see my child's really struggling with it, they don't understand it, it just takes too long. And how can the teacher help me, and how can I help the teacher figure out what's going on here? Another thing to do is really encourage organization. And the more we organize as a family, the easier that's going to go for all of us. The first is a checklist. So most parents like to have a checklist of who has tests coming up. Putting that on a calendar on our refrigerator or in our kitchen. Putting in good things like family simchas onto that, so parents know if they're not going to be available on a certain evening or they're going to be out later in the evening. An embedded schedule is the idea of writing everything down that a child has to do on a piece of paper. For younger children, we can sometimes take digital pictures and put that on. It's like a running list. And we say to the child, here's your schedule for the evening. And then it might say dinner, homework, brushing teeth, bath, packing snacks, laying out clothes. And as the child completes the items, if it's just on a tear-off piece of paper, they make checks, they hand it in, and when they get 10 of them completed in a timely fashion, you'll celebrate somehow. Sometimes parents laminate that embedded schedule. They give the child a large paper clip, and the child just moves the paper clip down. And when they're finished with the checklist for the evening, they put the paper clip in a can. And again, when you have 5 paper clips or 10 paper clips, there's some type of reward. This takes the nagging away from the parent during this time. There's plenty of other things that you're going to need to be nagging them about. And this gives them a sense of, what do I need to do next? What do I need to do next? What do I need to do next? We also want to really encourage children to use a planner. Some schools print their own planners. Divide it up how the school wants it, and if not, there are many student planners available at Walmart, Target, Staples, and kind of helping children figure out when they're writing down their homework and looking at that homework that they wrote down, and again, dividing it up into the two types of homework, the written homework and the study homework, and possibly using the two locations for both. Another idea is to have a box. If your child's issue is not the time management part of it, but more the organization, a large Rubbermaid box that may not be, you know, it might not fit in with your interior decor, but it's certainly going to help in the morning. And it's called the launch pad. And everything that child needs goes in that box. Their coat, their snack, their lunch, sports equipment that they're taking to school, the book bag or the briefcase that's packed, their shoes. You know, many parents will tell me the child ran around and missed the bus. Why? Because they couldn't find the other shoe. If they're bringing in tzedakah money or signed notices, so the child knows there's one go-to location in the morning that they stop off, they come down, they're dressed, they eat breakfast, and on their way out of the house, it's just one place to pick it all up. Another idea with organization is to really think about how the child is carrying all these items back and forth, whether you call it a book bag or a knapsack or a briefcase. There's some children that keep it really neat on their own, and you can see the different colored folders, and you can see the section for their drinks, and you can see the section for their snacks. And other children, when you open it up, they're not really quite sure what you're seeing because there's a lot of crumpled things and dog-eared papers, and it looks like the tuna sandwich from last week is in there as well. So what we say is some kids need a weekly Pesach clean, so to speak, of the book bag, and that's where you kind of dump the book bag upside down, let everything come out, take a wet paper towel, just wipe it around, and decide with the child what needs to go back, what can stay home, and what has to go into the garbage. Some kids don't need the whole thing dumped out, but you need to take a peek at what's going on. So as you're helping them by signing their homework and saying, okay, where does this need to go? You say, listen, anything that we need to do to organize your briefcase a little more. For some kids, they automatically want to have it neat and organized, and other kids do not realize that this is something that they have to maintain and upkeep. You need to keep an eye. Do your children need the supplies restocked? You bought them 10 pencils in September. Those pencils are long gone. What else do they need? So constantly ask, do you have what you need in school? And don't wait until they didn't have it. Have a couple extra glue sticks, scissors, loosely paper, folders available. Sometimes parents want to have all the homework put in a specific folder, usually a bright color, and that's called the homework folder. So kids know that throughout the day, whenever there's an assignment given out or a worksheet given out or a workbook page, they just put that in the folder. They open up the folder and everything that they need is there. The last thing that we want to think about is what we call the junk drawer folder. And that's something that I do with a lot of the kids that I work with. I say, do your mom or dad have a junk drawer in the kitchen? And they all laugh and say, yeah. And I say, what goes in? And they say, well, like anything that's kind of left on the counter that nobody knows where to put it, we just shove it in there. I say, great, what else is in there? Oh, some pens and, you know, some important papers and then some other stuff. And when does your mom or dad clean it out? And some kids will say they clean it out about once a week. And some kids will say they clean it out about once a year. So for some children, they can't put things even in the red homework folder during the day. And they can't put their chumash notes back in the right section in their binder. So we buy them a plastic folder that has Velcro or a snap, and we say to them, this is your junk drawer folder. Everything during the day that you don't know where to put, put in here. When you bring it home at night, I'll help you find the right place. I'll tell you which section it goes into. I'll tell you which folder it goes into. We'll work on that together. But don't be missing things in school or not having them because you just didn't know where to put them. Okay, I see that there is a question for a minute, so I'm going to find that. Could you please explain the embedded schedule again? Sure. Okay, so I'm going to just move back to that slide. The embedded schedule is kind of like a glorified to-do list. It's going to be, if you're imagining a piece of loose leaf paper, it's about half the size of a loose leaf paper, the long way. And we write down all the tasks that need to be done, either an evening routine or a morning routine. The child helps us create this. If we're making a permanent one that's laminated, we'll put up a digital picture of the child doing each of the items, brushing their teeth, taking out their pajamas, putting a snack in their briefcase, putting the briefcase in the box near the door, preparing their clothes, saying Shema, saying goodnight. If it's a morning routine, it might be getting up, you know, getting dressed, brushing teeth, eating breakfast. A lot of parents struggle with nagging children for all the things that they know they need to do every evening. So the child does one item and then gets stuck and needs to be nagged again and again. So when we have an embedded schedule, either it's a laminated one and we use one of those funky paper clips and we say to the child, you take care of your evening. This needs to be done by 8:30. This needs to be done by 7:45. If you are able to complete all these items, let me know by either giving me the paper clip that you moved down the schedule, or if we don't want to laminate it and we just want to have disposable ones, the child would actually sign their name at the bottom, like, look, look, Dad, look, Mom, I finished all these items. when you collect a certain amount of embedded schedules or embedded schedule paper clips, the child is reinforced for learning to take charge of their evening themselves. Does that answer your question? Okay, if it doesn't, I'm more than happy to come back to it. I'm going to go ahead now. I think that one of the most important things we can do during homework is really model empathic listening. And a lot of times a child will come home and they will say, my homework is so hard tonight. And you might not think it's so terrible to say things like, it's not so hard. Your brother has much harder homework. I don't think it's so hard. It wouldn't be so hard if you would have been listening in class. You always find something to complain about. Break it down, and then you'll see it's manageable. Or that kind of fake sympathy. I feel so, so terrible for you. And you're thinking, listen, it's really not that hard. And his brother really does have harder homework. And if he would have been listening, it wouldn't be so hard. And she always does complain about something. So I say, let's switch that for a minute. Let's not say my homework is so hard tonight. Let's say that you're coming home and you're saying to your spouse, my job is so hard. And your spouse says, it's not that hard. I have a much harder job. I don't think it's so hard. It wouldn't be so hard if you would work better. You're always complaining about something. Break it down. You'll see it's manageable. Or, oh, poor you. And all of a sudden, some of those responses don't feel as good. So we don't have to agree whether it is hard, whether it's not hard, and what came first. All we have to do is accept that the child is having this feeling about the homework. So we can offer that empathy by saying things like, wow, sounds like your homework is really tough tonight. It's hard to dread your homework. You wish your homework was easier. Wow, hard homework is the worst. Ouch. And sometimes the day after we move the child through that homework time, leave a post-it note or a love note hidden somewhere in their book bag, someplace that's safe that their friends won't find it, but they'll know that you really appreciated the effort they put into that homework. When we provide empathy, especially during the homework time, the child does not have to force that idea that the homework was unmanageable on us. When we use one of the other responses like, it's not so hard, or your brother has much harder homework, the child has to dig their heels in and let us know why their point of view is correct. But once we've accepted the healing, the child is actually able to move past it. Don't get stuck on the feelings during an evening. Validate, show empathy, and then move on to the task at hand. Another thing that I think is probably one of the biggest things that you can do once you make this paradigm shift is really model coping. Because just like our child is getting flustered during this time, some of us are also getting frustrated and really flustered. So when a child comes and says, I don't have my book, I didn't bring it home, the test is tomorrow, or I don't know how to do this, I'll never know how to do it, she's going to scream at me in class tomorrow. What we want to do is show them that there is something called the problem-solving model. So the problem-solving model has five different steps. I'm going to explain the steps. And I encourage you to practice this idea not first on homework, but first on something else that your child is struggling with. The first thing to do is really define the problem. So the problem is you don't have your math book and the test is tomorrow. So the problem is you're missing the notes from Paradimo and you're supposed to write a synopsis for tomorrow. Once the problem is clearly defined, we say to the child, well, what are all the things we can do about that? And some of the answers we're going to get, we may not think are the most intelligent or the most realistic or the most helpful. Like one of them might be, I'll just drop out of school, or I'll just cut class, or I'll just copy it from a friend. But at that brainstorming first step, we simply write down every idea that the child generates. There'll be time to evaluate it later, but if we cross off ideas now before we even start, we're really limiting how the child's thinking. The next thing we do is once we've generated many, many options, and if a child says, there's nothing else I can do besides not going to school tomorrow, you might say to them, can I offer a suggestion? Would you be willing for me to add to our brainstorming list? And if they say no, then the answer is no, and we just evaluate the option they had. Step two is to evaluate all the choices, which means, okay, so you said one option is not to go to school tomorrow. What will happen if you won't go to school tomorrow? Well, you'll have to write me a note that I was sick. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. What would happen if you go without the note? I'll have to sit detention. Okay, so is not going to school tomorrow a great option for you because you'll have to sit detention? Maybe not. We take each idea through to fruition, and we show the child what would happen if, and we let the child help us evaluate. Step three is to actually select one. This is hard to do because it's not us selecting the option. It's empowering the child to select an option. And sometimes we have to be able to let our children take risks, and we say learn lessons the easy way, because any lessons learned in elementary school are certainly going to be easier than lessons learned in high school are going to be much easier than lessons learned the hard way in life. So they have to try the option that they chose. And we say to them, okay, try it, but build in that time for follow-up. When are you going to get back to them and say, what happened? How'd it go? What did the teacher say? What was the consequence of doing that? What we want to do is we want to think about solution-oriented. You know, if you think about a very positive person that you know in your life, whether it's your spouse or a family member or a friend, positive people are generally solution-oriented. Things aren't problems. Given a problem, they have multiple ways to solve that problem, and that's what makes them so positive. We also want to take this seriously, but not emotionally. When the children see that we're getting so emotional about their homework, and we're getting so nervous, and we're getting so anxious, and we're getting so angry, that transfers and projects right onto them. Seeing adults handle stress helps children become resilient, and teaching resilience any way we can is one of the most important life skills that we can do for children. Another thing is really to reinforce independence. And independence is being available during the homework time, but not actually doing it for the child. So that's the joke at the bottom. The mother says, she got a B on her book report. And the father says, that's a good grade. And the mother says, are you kidding? Do you know how hard I worked on it? That was an A paper. You know, this mother is so invested because it was her book report. It wasn't her child. Before we really let a child be independent, we just do want to make sure that the child's capable of doing it. We want to help the child if they've tried something initially on their own. So sometimes the child says, I can't. And we could say to them, is there any part of it that you could start with that? And sometimes the only part that they can't is writing their name on the paper or getting the right supplies. And then you say to them, wow, you got started. And then sometimes that success kind of propels them to the next success. Help means facilitating the child doing it, not actually doing it for the child. What we want to do is we want to know the difference between reminding a child and checking in on them and helping them versus nagging them, correcting them, or doing it for them. Another important point is really to know your child's learning style and learning capabilities. And I remember this very clearly from one of my older children that's well past school at this point. And I remember in first grade that child came home with some spelling words possibly that included like the month of the year, maybe January or February. And my child could not spell any of the words no matter how hard I tried to study with him. And I remember thinking, this teacher is crazy. Who expects a first grader to know that? What was she thinking? Until I realized that that child was actually really struggling with spelling and struggling with reading. And the rest of the class spelled those words just fine. So instead of looking at something and saying it's the school's fault, it's the teacher's problem, we have to be really realistic about what our child's capabilities are. We want to know, how does this child process best? Does it work better when we're telling it out loud to the child, when the child's seeing something? Are they a visual learner and we need to write it down? Do they need a combination of both, which is actually something that most children do best with? Does it help when I give more examples, when I make a flow chart or a Venn diagram? Does this child know how to teach themselves study techniques? Do they know how to make some mnemonics? Do they know how to make flashcards? Can you put it in a song? Can you make it into a tune? I remember studying with one of the girls that came out to one of my resource rooms, and she came out with a stack of vocabulary words written on flashcards. And she said, I need to study these. So I was observing, and she was studying with her tutor, and she read through all 50 words, and she said, okay, I need to do it again. And the tutor said to her, well, wait a minute. We got about 43 of them right. We don't have to do all of them again. Why don't we just do the ones that were hard for you? And she looked at the tutor with these really big eyes, and she said, I'm allowed? No, nobody had ever taught her. Like, flashcards is a great idea, but you only keep flashing what's still hard. You don't have to keep using the group. So we want to make sure that that works. So before we even know our children's study techniques and learning styles, let's think a little bit about ourselves. What I'd like you to do is using the hand on the check, actually. If you can just click on that icon when I ask how you process best, just so you can start thinking about that. So click on the check mark if you process best when people are just speaking. And let's take a look at who's joining us tonight and see who works best just with great. So I see a couple checks there. Who works best, who processes best when it's written? When it's written. So put a check mark if you're the type that you need to see the things in front of you. You're a visual learner. Great. And how many of you would put the check mark if it's a combination? If it's a combination. We have a lot of people calling in. That's kind of hard to do, but thank you. Great. For all those people that joined us online tonight, that's wonderful to see those check marks. Great. Let's continue on. Sometimes it's really too hard for the child, and this glimpse added through the homework time is often our first occasion and first time to be able to know this. You know, for those of you that know me or don't know me, I wear lenses about 18 to 20 hours a day. And when I go to sleep, I take them out and I have the glasses on my nightstand. But if I have to get up in the middle of the night and make the baby a bottle, I don't stick in the lenses. I don't even bother to put on the glasses. I squint, and I squint well, and I squint hard. And I make it downstairs, and I find the can of formula, and it's not cornstarch, and I make the baby a bottle, and I give it to the right person, and it works. But I wouldn't be able to prepare PowerPoint slides like this. I wouldn't be able to drive to work. I wouldn't be able to do my job with that level of squinting. And why is that? Because it's too much effort. I can keep it up for a short period of time, but I can't keep it up that long. So sometimes a child can pull through on four examples, but they can't do it for the whole page. Or they were able to focus and listen for the first 15 minutes of the Navi lesson, but they couldn't do it more than that. We need to look at what amount of effort can they realistically put in so that we don't say to them, but you just did it, so I know you can do it. We say, don't hold it against them because they did it once. So look at where do they max out? Where does their attention max out? Where does their effort max out? Where does their thinking max out? And look for alternatives. Plan with the teacher. Can they do less? Can they do something modified? Can they do something different? Is there any way that I can compensate? The last thing, and not the last thing, but one of the things that I want to leave you with before we wrap up is the idea of a 911 plan. 911 are the three most popular numbers in America. I think every child and every adult knows that when you call 911, you get help, whether it's police, or whether it's the fire department, or whether it's an ambulance. And 911 is the ability to reach out and get some help. And sometimes we need to say as parents, this homework situation is not working, and I really need help. And I need a plan for this. Sometimes it's just a high school girl to come in for half an hour and be a homework helper. And maybe just the interaction is too stressful with your child. And maybe they just need a gentle reminder. Maybe they'd be more apt to work with somebody. High school girls usually aren't too expensive. And that's for somebody that just needs somebody else to do it with them. Sometimes there's a neighbor that's an expert in a subject. I remember being in high school, and we had a neighbor that was a statistician. And when I took statistics, and I had the night before a test, I would go over and say, can you just show me this formula? And he was thrilled to do that. He was so excited that, you know, students were learning something that he spent his day's work on. So sometimes we have a close neighbor or friend that's an expert and can help with that. Sometimes a spouse is better in one subject than another. You know, My math abilities nowadays with Common Core math kind of maxed out at about fourth or fifth grade. So once my kids get older than that, I say to them, go ask Abba. You know, I'll help you with the literature and I'll help you with Finnish, but math, go ask Abba. Sometimes a child does need a tutor, and sometimes the tutor is just a regular tutor that breaks things down for them. Sometimes it's specialized tutor. There are people that specialize just in Kriya, just in Chumash, just in comprehension, or just in math. Sometimes the child actually needs accommodations, and sometimes the child needs modifications, in which case we need the teacher in the school on board with that to be able to make it work. What we want to reinforce is really reinforcements. Adults build in treats in their life. If you look at the amount of people buying caramel macchiatos or lattes at Starbucks, it's unbelievable. You know, these people said, a regular coffee is not going to do it for me today. I'm having a hard day. I need this. I need a break. I need to read. I need some downtime. I need some chocolate. So what we want to say is don't be afraid to reward children for hard work and effort. These are kids, you know, our children have a dual curriculum day. They've been sitting in school for 7 to 8 hours. They're coming in and, you know, doing more of this at home. Praise them. And by praise, you know, the typical praise is the three-pronged praise where we have the child's name like Moshe, and we have a superlative, excellent, and we have the specific, excellent, completing this math sheet. But sometimes we need to take that praise and ramp it up a level, and that's using words like thank you. And yeah, we thank kids for things that they're absolutely supposed to do because we as adults, we love to be thanked and appreciated for the things that we're supposed to do as well. If a child was struggling with something and then made that shift to be able to overcome that struggle, we're going to use the words, we notice. We notice that you are really having a hard time remembering your homework, bring home your planner, and today you got it. I'm proud. Sometimes we have an individual reward for a child, so that might be completion of a lot of embedded schedules if it was a morning routine or evening routine that was hard, or sometimes it's just the child put in a lot of effort to study for something. We don't reward the grade, we reward the effort. So if your child studied hard for something, don't wait to say, what'd you get on it? Just say, you studied hard, you know, I'm proud, I want to reward you. And sometimes we do a family reward, which is really special, like Hani studied for over an hour and put in so much time memorizing the table, the whole family is getting ice cream for dessert tonight. Or our whole family is going to take a break and go to sleep 15 minutes later and take a walk or watch this together or play this game together. And every now and then, we want rewards built in that are just because I love you, just because you're so cute, just because I enjoy being your parent. Something that homework kind of leads itself into and lends itself to that I want to touch on is the idea of tests. Thinking about a test, because much of homework is actually test preparation. Tests are divided into three parts. The successful completion of a test means mastery over content. Did my child know the information? Format. Did my child understand the type of questions that were being asked? Was it mi amar el mi or al mi ne amar? Was it matching? Was it true and false? Was it fill-ins? Was it essays? And working under a time pressure. Was my child able to complete this assignment in this amount of time? If your child is not doing well on tests, we want to do a little bit of analysis. Which area was hard? Was it that they didn't know the information, they didn't understand the questioning, or they couldn't get it done in that time? Do they have the information they need to study? And do they understand the types of questions being asked? We often have some interesting guests in our house, and one guest we had was sharing kind of some personal details, and I was getting uncomfortable, so I went in the kitchen, and I figured I'll, you know, bang around some of the pots or the platters, and maybe that'll change the topic. And one of my kids came in and said, Ma, TMI. And at that time, I didn't know what it was. I said, TMI, what does that mean? And they said, too much information. So at the end of a webinar, it's definitely TMI. I've been speaking for almost an hour. So I just want to end with two quick, very brief questions, thinking about your child's homework experience from some of the ideas. What area can you easily change? If you're online with us tonight, it'd be great if you can just, you know, pick one item and kind of type it into the chat room. But we always say start with the easiest item. So if your child's basically organized, but you just need to add one more piece, start with that. Don't start with you know, getting the hardest thing accomplished, because that's frustrating. Build in a success right away. What's the most challenging part of this whole homework experience? Is it the work? Is it the organization? Is it the time management? Is it your time management? Because our evenings are so busy and so packed. Only attempt to change that after you've already built in some successes. So I'm just going to leave the chat room open at this time so that people can type in what they think is something that they could easily start with that would help them. And I'm going to turn the controls back over, I guess, to Sarah to end this up tonight. And I really want to thank you for joining in and giving us your time tonight. Okay, great. We're getting some responses here. So we're finding a set place for homework. So I'm hoping that that's one of the easier things. If it's a harder thing, don't start with it. Start with something easier. Okay, great. We have a question. What about being punished by rewards? Too much praise makes it about us and not them. So I'm not 100% sure I'm understanding what you're saying. I think you're, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you're concerned about over-rewarding. So I don't know if we could over-reward if it's done with a sense of really being genuine. So I'm not saying that they need a trip to Eretz Yisrael or an American Girl doll when the math examples get done, but there's a lot of things, little things we can do along the way. Most importantly, starting with verbal praise and then moving to time, you know, time from us and then moving to tangibles that definitely is reinforcing to them. Okay, you like take it seriously, but not emotionally. Yeah, and that's hard to do because it's our child and we want them to do well. And if they aren't able to complete this homework, then they're going to, you know, fail the grade and fail school and not get into college and not get married. And who knows what's going to happen for the rest of their life. So that's not what we want to convey. We want to say to them, you know, it's homework and we can do this and we can do this well and we're going to get through it even if, you know, even if there's a big challenge along the way.
Thank you so much, Tzipora, for that fabulous presentation. I know in my family, we're talking about rewards. So my children will say, am I Slurpee worthy? So Slurpee worthy is something
like
when you've put in, because for some reason, Slurpees, they're about $1.25, so it's perfect for
right.
the budget. I know
right.
we're not supposed to reward with food, but we all do. So,
right.
But it,
right.
Slurpee worthy means it was
I
something
like
difficult. And you put in effort. So if it was a spelling test and you knew all the words on Monday, that doesn't make you, and then you get 100. You're not, that's not a Slurpee worthy event. It's really when you've really put in all that effort. But I know tonight we all have some more concrete steps that we can take at home to make the homework process smoother and less painful. And I don't know who you've helped more tonight, parents or the children. I think it may be the parents in terms of our coping with the homework process. We're going to take a couple of questions if anyone has. If you do have a question, please raise your hand if you'd like to be unmuted. Before we address those questions, I'd like just to alert you to the next two scheduled webinars that we have. If we could have the webinar slide up, Eitan. In January on the 7th, we have a webinar for teachers and parents all over the place to keeping the pace. And that's with Mindy Rosenthal. And on Tuesday, the February 17th, we're very, very delighted to say that we have Michelle Garcia Winner, and she'll be presenting on nurturing social thinking in children. And she's really a woman that lectures on this topic all over the country.
Sarah,
you're
can I
be,
just
yeah, go ahead.
Actually, lectures all over the world, and if anybody is available on that evening to be able to have the opportunity to hear Michelle Garcia Winner, first of all, at no cost, which is unbelievable, and on, you know, she gets to the East Coast only, you know, once every couple years, so that's just an unbelievable evening, and I'm so happy that Hidden Sparks is able to offer that to parents.
Yeah, that will be a popular one. So when the registration opens, if you're interested, make sure you register quickly. Elia, yeah, their slides will be available when the webinar is posted within the next day or so. The slides will be posted as well, and that will be accessed through our website. You're going to be receiving an email this evening with a brief evaluation form for the webinar, and we just ask that you take a moment to fill it out. We always appreciate your feedback here at Hidden Sparks. So if anybody has a handout, we can do a quick scan for questions. I don't see any, though I do see that someone, I think this the motivation issue, Tzipora, always comes up in terms of the degree to which we provide right. prizes.
So I think that what I'm looking at it is, I'm not looking at it to build their internal sense of motivation. I'm looking at it as a reinforcement for what was done. And when children have really good feelings of being recognized for what was done, then that's what gives them the strength to go on to have internal motivation. You know, we all create our value system based on the people around us in a positive and healthy way. And when it's coming from parents who appreciate our efforts and things that we're doing, that builds our sense of self. Once we have a strong sense of self, then we ourselves bring out our motivation. So I'm not looking at it to motivate them further. I'm looking at it to reward them for what was done. And I hope that clarified a little bit.
And I think, well, as adults, whether we work out of the home or within the home, we all may be motivated to do a good job, but it never hurts for recognition from a boss, from a thank you from a child. So I think those external rewards really help build on our internal motivation.